that.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I'm very glad to see we've had no casualties from E-meters. All present, no casualties from E-meters at all. You know, those things bite. They do. They do. There's many poor criminal doing time, or who has left his charred embers in an electric chair because nobody knew how to run one. You're using the exact instrument, by the way, that is used as the skin galvanometer of a lie detector set. They use, in addition to that, something that does exactly the same thing, but measures the pulse, and another one that does respiration. They had a poorer machine than our electrometer, with the same principle, plus blood test, plus lung respiration, and then they interrogate somebody and prove he's guilty. That machine does no more prove guilt or innocence or anything else. All it proves is charge. That's all it proves. And when you get through a study of this, I want you to be able to give cards and spades and the runaround to any police lie detector expert. Matter of fact, just by showing him that people have lived before, he would faint. Just by asking almost anybody if he killed anybody, he's going to get, if you insist on a date or something of the sort, he's going to get a positive reaction on his machine, which is very embarrassing to a police officer to find out that he's a murderer. We have somebody present who proved it conclusively to somebody one time. He told him all about Scientology, and the fellow went back impressed with just one thing, that he was a killer. Of course, he worked on a newspaper. And it's just a step, I tell you, from butchering people to butchering the news. All right. Let's talk about something that is very much in our minds these days. And this is the second lecture on clearing methodology. Now, technical facts about clearing occupy one field. The technical aspects, the research data, the proven conclusions concerning states of case, you see, that's all under one heading. And under another heading, there's this thing we call methodology. How does a person get there? Well, now, he obviously gets there by running answers to a process, doesn't he? Oh, no, he doesn't. If you haven't got an auditor there to process him, or in America, process him, if you don't have administrative lineups, if you haven't got financial feasibilities all straightened out on this subject of clearing, you'll make very few clears. Now, you might sit right there with all the techniques in the world to make a clear and flub making one, because you'd be defeated by the methodology lack of. That's the administrative line, the available time, your own economic strain, which is always considerable. You'd be defeated by the PC's inability to afford enough hours. You get the idea. So there has to be other know-how parallel to technology. And wherever a field auditor or wherever an organization auditor falls down today, fall short of clearing somebody, he has been whipped by methodology, not by technology. If you had the fellow long enough and he'd sit still, you could clear him. Doesn't matter much what clear you'd be striking for. If you went for an old-style mess clear, you could make it. You could find the old stuck needle and so forth on help and sort it all out and run brackets on it and gradually get him separated out and squared around. You think life was much better. Get him so his bank wouldn't bite, get it all keyed out nicely, and level him off. Yeah, you could do that. Or you could go on a much more direct route of auditing with the exact definition of operating Thetan, willing and knowing cause over life, matter, energy, space, and time. You make it clear you're being defeated by methodology. How do we get him to move in and sit still, and how do we get ourselves in a position where we can sit still long enough, you get the idea, to accomplish this fact? Now, if that particular aspect of clearing is not resolved, you won't make any clears. You see, then there's two things can happen here. Two things can happen. The PC finds it infeasible because of time, finance, something of the sort, or the auditor finds it unfeasible because of the same. You see, there can be two breakdowns on this line. And most usually, these breakdowns are quite adequate to prevent it. So don't think it's enough just to know your technique. No, you've got to know more than that. You've got to know something about economics. You've got to know something about space and place. You've got to know something about administration. Now, if as many fellows who should know better can lay ostrich eggs on the subject of administration, don't kick yourself too hard if you do. They can. They can lay ostrich eggs on this subject. Walk into a government someday. They're supposed to get governing done. They're supposed to govern. Take care of the justice, problems of property and equity, safeguard the security of the population against crime and external aggressors. That's about all they're supposed to do. A very purist view of government. They get so involved in economics. They finally involve all of us in economics. They get so involved in paper chains. They get all of us involved in paper chains. And finally, they forget all about their high-level purpose of governing, protecting the public safety and so forth, and just get into some kind of an economic mishmash. They don't know which way they're going or what they're doing. We could do this with clearing. Just neat you please. We get so involved making money so that we could go on and do something and get so involved in administration, which we only partially understood, and get so many stacks of paper stacked up that have to be signed and get so many solicitors on the lines to okay leases that never get okayed because the corporate status has not been okayed, because the government hasn't been okayed. You know, I mean, it goes right on back. Next thing you know, you got paper chains going in all directions. Everybody knows what you're supposed to do, vaguely, but nobody's done it for the last century. You see how this could be? The whole parade could get stopped right at the outset. If you don't do administration well, you come up against economic problems. For instance, any central organization staff that has had a bog here and a little bog there and has not done some promotion over here, all of a sudden finds itself in an economic bind. They got any time to clear anybody? Oh, no. Get in some more PCs. Get in some more students. Do something. Hire some sheepdogs. Get them out into the public and get them to chase the people in. Anything. The landlord this morning, as I came downstairs, the landlord said to me distinctly that he wanted me to live elsewhere. Okay, what happened? Something happens to the lineup. something happens to the methodology, as I'm calling it here. Something happens there, and it snaps the whole purpose of things all around backwards and upsets everything. Takes, actually, a pretty smooth-running and purposeful machine, you might say, if you want to call it that, to walk people in, make sure that they get the proper results from technology, walk them up into a higher level, individual processing, and then walk them out again clear. Sounds so simple. Every part of this society is economically booby-trapped. It's like the picture that's crooked on the wall in the house the Germans just vacated. Private comes along, decides he'd better straighten that picture up. The whole house blows up in his face. You get nervous after a while. You somehow or another miss somebody's doing a little reception for you, and they fail to write down the names and addresses of people who telephone and the names of addresses of people who walk in. Well, it's not much of a miss, you know. It's a slight little thing, you know. And now you've got a brand new upper stage course, and you want to get some literature out to these people. You want to straighten it all out, and you say, oh, good. And you have a big stack of it printed up, and you're going to send it to all of your friends that wanted to call you. You reach around and you say, all right now, Bessie Ann or somebody, where's the addresses?
Addresses? What addresses?
The addresses of all the people that wanted this service. Oh, well. You know that nice young man that came in the other day? Well, he took them. That nice young man from the other side of town that's running a group over there. Yeah, he said he'd write to all of them for me. Oh, amazing things can happen. Or they just don't write them down at all. When you start bringing order on the first dynamic, and fail to bring order on the third, you're in trouble. Because for sure, the third is going to flash back at the first. Therefore, whether you like it or not, your forward pressure is as social as it is individual. And if you fail to answer up on the third dynamic, and fail to straighten things out administratively, organizationally, and take that responsibility, too, you don't get anything done on the first dynamic, because these dynamics have a habit of interlocking and backflashing and upsetting everything. Well, similarly, you'll just about get man cleared and the animal kingdom will protest or something, you know. Ant will walk up to you and he'll say, oh, well, all right, how about me? How about an HAS co-audit for ants? Well, I tell you what you tell him. You say, well, little ant, we'll get together four or five other ants and we'll give you an HPA course for ants. You say, an HPA, what's that? You say, that's a Hubbard Professional Ant. Well, you get so interiorized into the dynamic in general that you have to look at an odd one to see what you really have to do. You have to get an exterior view to something. But with methodology, you can accomplish the goal. And clearing is laid out in these steps today. And the first of these steps is letting somebody hear about it. And the second of these steps has to do with establishing a zone in which service can be delivered. And the third of them is getting somebody into that zone and HCing him while in that zone. And the next step is to provide an adequacy of individual address to the case when it is needed and necessary. After they're through with an HAS co-audit, they have to move into some individual address. Well, if you're going to move an awful lot of people into an individual address of case, you're certainly going to have a few HPAs. And you can't sit there for the rest of your life and never tell anybody anything. And when you've got somebody moved out of that group and he's all nicely fixed up and so forth, I'm afraid you will have to have some additional membership-type group to which he can belong and where he can meet. Otherwise, he's going to get lonesome, go downscale just for lack of communication. And all the way along the line, we have to provide him with further ammunition to hand out to people so that they know what he's doing and so they could avail themselves of it too. And these various stages can be broken down even more minutely, but those actually are the major stages that have to be answered up to. First, you have to be heard a little bit. And next, you have to have a zone where service can be delivered. And next, and you think this is very silly to add this in as a major point, but organization after organization flubs this point. They flub it. People walk in the front door and turn around and walk out again. Quite wonderful, everybody. This is so routine. It's to be amazing. People are always coming along and saying to me, we ought to buy more advertising and more publicity, and we ought to get our names in the papers more often, and we ought to, you know, do this and do that and get somebody going out and doing this and that. And they miss a point, the point which I just brought up there. You've established a zone for a person to attain service in. Now there's got to be some way to move this person into that zone and render the service. And people just miss this one. Awful funny story just on this line. It was almost tragic, but the Hazi was throbbing along and income was low and everything was going to pieces and people were beginning to feel sad. This was years and years ago. And Mary Sue took over as DOP and registrar all in the same hat. And they'd been getting 2 to 4 PCs a week for about a year, something like that. 2, 4, 5, something of that sort. She took over, and all of a sudden she had 15. 15 a week. Well, look, she didn't have any time to write any letters or do any promotion. She didn't have the faintest opportunity to make known that anything odd or exceptional had occurred. She really didn't. Because it happened in the very next week. Only it kept on happening week after week after week. A lot of people. She went off and it dropped down again. Now, it's all right to say, well, this happened because she's Mary Sue. That's all right, and I'll give you something there. But look, when I ask her what she did to make this happen, her answer was too simple for anybody to pay any attention to. She just signed up the people who walked in the front door. That was all she did. Now, obviously, previously, there had been perhaps 10, 11 people who had walked in the front door who had turned around and walked out the front door again. And Mary Sue just made sure that the zone which had been established for service was able to move the person into the zone and render the service. That was actually all that had happened, you see. That one little step. Now, we don't think that's very important. Person walks in, they say, what is this? What is this HAS co-auditor?
or what is this thing called audit, and I don't know what this thing is, and what is it, and so on. Somebody says, well, fine, I'll tell you all about it. And they proceed to tell them all about it, and the person says, well, maybe I'll call you up someday. And they turn around, and they walk back out and appear on the street, and nobody ever hears them again. That's what happens. And Mary Sue said, well, the best thing to do is show you. Sign here. And moved them up into the HGC, and that was it. Difference of attitude. Total difference of attitude. Person believes he's there to answer questions, he'll answer questions. Person believes he's there to move people into the zone of service, he'll move people into the zone of service. That's just about all there is to it. It's just a difference of purpose and intent. And if you think a Scientologist can't move people into the zone of service, if his intention is to do so, why, just observe it someday. Just get somebody to change his mind about this intention and get him moved in. Simple. This poor fellow walks in, he's dead, as far as we're concerned. He's dead, because he runs into the receptionist. Receptionist says, aha, this person is supposed to move into this service zone and get some service. And so the receptionist says, now let's see, how can I make that happen? Well, let's better fix it up so he sees the registrar right away and moves this line through. And the registrar says, well, this person is supposed to be moved into this service zone. That's what's supposed to happen. I think it's all bogged down with economics and this and that and higher purchase and time payment and notes and receipts and so on. There's nothing much going to happen. No, if her sole interest, actually, and intent is simply, as a person walks into that service zone, just to move them on in, and that's it, all the rest of these things tend to fall away as problems, because they're problems which are incidental to the primary purpose, which is to move the person into the zone of service. And that probably is the biggest point of fall down with a field auditor, a central organization, or any clinic, any place. That's undoubtedly the biggest point of fall down. That's the one they don't do. They promote like mad, advertise like mad, get in the papers and run all up and get reporters all over the place and go on BBC or CBS or something. And, you know, people like mad. There's a famous name in early Dianetics. He was giving talks to people who came in of an evening. I'm going to show you how these things can happen. Central organization in Los Angeles was having a financial slump. They were walking around wondering whether or not they shouldn't grease the cat or take some other practical measure. Or maybe possibly write their letters on different colored paper. They had big problems. Never faced up to the fact that all they had to do was move some people into the joint. So I'd made a bunch of 15-minute lectures. I went down to a little peanut whistle station, sat in the middle of a valley out there in that vast area called Los Angeles. And this little peanut whistle station could almost be heard on police radio. You know, I'm music lovers listen to it, that caliber. They played nothing but Prokofiev, you know. It was the only station I could afford at the moment, and I said, what'll it cost to put all of these on the air at, I figured it out, I think, very precisely. The fellow should get home by 5:30, and he should be sitting around ready to eat supper in that immediate area by 5:30. Therefore, if anything is played between 5:30 and 5:45, the latecomers will get it on the radio coming home, or they'll get it after they've gotten home, and not when they're so complacent and full of food, you see. They won't pay any attention to it. And then invited them down that night to hear a lecture on the subject, and then played a 15-minute lecture by me. 125 people a night moved into that small auditorium. Regularly and routinely, 125 new people. Bang, 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 bang. You know what they did with them? This famous name had been carefully provided with cardboard on which to write, I want training, I want processing, you know. I am interested in books, send me some literature, mark one, you know. The stacks of these things have been carefully put around the room. And when nobody moved into auditing, and when nobody moved into training, after these hordes of people moved into that auditorium and out again, I went around and saw the janitor. I said, what's happened to those little slips of paper? Of course, like anybody else in Los Angeles, he was an old hand in showbiz. He'd had an act with donkeys or something of the sort in his early days. And, he says, that jerk. He says, he never opens up the gate. That's all. He says, I've been picking up your replies. He says, here they are. He knew they were valuable. So he hands me cards. A stack of cards about 300 high. All the people who wanted training and processing. And after that, I had a very simple system. The people threw them on the floor. The janitor picked them up and gave them to me. But it was a system, and it worked. And then I got about three phone girls to sit down, call these people up, tell them to come in for appointments with the registrar, and told the registrar to sign them all up. The registrar did, and business just went zoom. You see, that step had been omitted. What do you do with the person after you've got a zone of service, and they walk in the front door? Well, obviously, you don't let them walk back out again. Now, it's been tough in past years to convince anybody that anything drastic could happen. But the old PE course, which ran five nights a week, if given by a very, very good PE instructor, would hold them. But there wasn't much else to offer them except this terrific jump on a gradient into the HGC, or auditing, or back out to a field auditor. There was this terrific jump, see. They didn't have enough certainty to risk anything. Their economics were too involved, and so on. All right, now we filled in that jump. Now, they're going to get something out of a PE course that's properly taught and the HC is good. And that's free, so it's very easy to move them in that far. Now, the next jump that they take, people can make mistakes with this, which is just a wonderful lesson of how people can make mistakes. They only pay down 2 guineas or $10 a week for 2 consecutive weeks to wind up with an HAS course, 3 nights and 3 nights. Now, if that comm course is properly taught, they'll certainly get something out of that, and they'll think that's very interesting. Now, they'll move a little deeper into the co-audit, and that at 2 guineas, or $10, something in that order, carries them on into, well, in a lot of cases, actual views of the elephant. That's pretty good. Now, all the way along here, they've got something to do, something that's convincing, something that's effective. Now, you could get too anxious and move co-audit right up to the front gates, you see. And here are fellows who have never heard of any TRs sitting there trying to repeat an auditing command. After a few of them fall on their heads, then you'll move HAS up in front of that out of self-protection. Then you'll find you needn't have been that anxious and put a PE in front of that. Get it back together again, but you'll probably maladjust these things a few times just out of anxiety of getting the person in the seat in the service area. Understandable. But this was the wild one. This is carefully designed, very carefully designed, experimented with for years, done repeatedly with great success, PE Foundation. And I heard from a central organization, believe it or not, of course it is in some far-off place, but they actually wrote me just today that they weren't doing too well getting people onto the co-audit course because they couldn't get them to sign up for very many weeks at a time or pay in advance for very many weeks at a time. Oh, now, you tell me, how wild can a mock-up go? Why is it 2 guineas? or $10. Why? Because a person can pay that. And if it's paid every week, he can go on paying it. But here was a new anxiety showing up. How many weeks can we sign them up for in advance? You don't want to sign anybody up in advance. Just move them in to the service area and let them pay for exactly what they're getting as fast as they get it. The excellence of the service, believe me, in HAS and co-audit alone will keep them in the service area. That alone. And if it's being done upside down and backwards and with very, very poor HC, they won't stay there. So, an examination and a quick exchange of communication demonstrated that this was what was happening in that particular HAS co-audit. What was happening was very sloppy HC. Lots of bad ARC. You know, I mean, the ARC was all gooey. You know, we laud you. That isn't real. Sit down. Thank you. Walk into the other room. Thank you. Sign here. Thank you. Be here again at 7 p.m. Thank you. That's really about the highest level ARC you ever wanted to see. See, that's big, precise, real. You know what they're supposed to do. They do it. The public at large walking in on you will always introduce or try to introduce some confusion. And they mill around like a bunch of sheep. They do. And not because they're aberrated either. It's because they've walked into a new zone and they have not yet recognized the established order of the zone. And they're trying to find out what it is. Well, come on, give them a break. Tell them. Now, as we look over this approach, we find that we have achieved pretty well, in workable form, a gradient which graduates somebody from idle curiosity to sitting still and finding out there's something that he might learn. He, of course, that there are some goals to all this. Up to a recognition that he can't communicate very well, and he probably could communicate better, and if there is something that'll show him how to communicate better, an HAS course. And then, your next gradient, that something can bite and fast, and that he can bite and fast with co-auditing on simple auditing commands. And if you can move him that far, you've done it. Now look, no printed advertisement is going to move him that far. Not one. I don't care if it is put out in Esquire with naked women all over the front cover and the back cover, and if the type is formed out of naked women. You can almost go on the basis that if you're good enough, he'll hear about you. You can almost go on that basis. Now, people moving in have to be moved in through a gradient scale of reality. You're taking them from almost no wall. Well, don't expect them to do anything else but react on a sort of a no-wall basis. But what can you do with people who don't know where the wall is? You can walk them over to it and put their hand on it and say, now, do you think, in your opinion, there's a wall there? Good. Thank you very much. Sit down in the chair. Now, it takes HC. It takes a precise command. It takes some doing this. It takes some action. In particular, it takes causation on the part of any staff member or any field auditor or any staff that he has toward life. It takes causativeness. Tell you at once what will happen if you don't have causation on a post. If you have a post being a total effect, not causative, you might think things will snap in on it. They won't. They won't at all. This person Whenever a problem or an object moves toward him, but particularly a problem, will juggle the problem over to somebody else.
Really?
Won't handle the problem. Why won't this person handle the problem? Because he knows none of his own solutions stick. In other words, he can't be causative. So if he handled the problem, he knows he'd upset everything because he knows his postulates don't stick. So he has to send them to somebody who can handle the problem, whose postulates will stick. Now, where you have a half a dozen people collected together, each one of whom is convinced his postulates won't stick, all you get is a terrific juggle from one post to the next of problems. Person walks in, he's got a problem. So the problem gets moved to the next post, to the next post, to the next post. It goes back to the first post again, and the problem has not yet been handled. That's because nobody the person saw believed personally that his postulate, his own postulate, could stick. In other words, he wasn't causative. So he just moved everything around in a sort of a squirrel cage. Now, when a person moves in, if you had somebody on a reception desk, when this person first appears, if you have somebody on a reception desk who won't handle the person's problems, Then you again have this sort of a mill race. It started right there at that point, and this third stage that I talked to you about, you've got the person's heard about it, you've established the service area, now moving the person to that service area is violated. The first time that person runs into somebody who believes his postulates won't stick, that person will never move him on into the service area. If that person who is receiving and moving him into the service area does not believe that he can make his own postulate stick, then he keeps shuffling problems around. And your whole zone becomes a zone full of unhandled problems. Now, nobody expects you to be as good as an ACC instructor in handling problems, particularly random problems. They've gotten pretty good at this, years go on. Their postulates stick. I believe you've noticed it. But if they didn't, then everybody in an HCC would have problems which kept walking around in circles and never got solved, and it had eventually come just a morass of personal problems. Now, you take any department of a central organization, when they start handling nothing but problems of the students in training, you've got a lousy academy. Who wants any problems from a student in an academy? They're a drug on the market. What happens there is training. It's all very well for somebody to say, well, they can't be trained because they have so many problems. No, it isn't so. When they've offered problems to the auditor or offered problems to the instructor or offered problems up at the front desk or offered problems to accounts and so forth, these things just haven't been handled. They just keep going blah, 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 and run here and run there. Next thing you know, it's just no order left. So there's two ways that person doesn't get moved into the service sphere. Two ways. One, the problems he has are not handled. That's it, you see. Guy comes up with a problem, that problem is not handled. And the next way, nobody will be causative on 8C. Okay. One person does come up with a problem, they do want something to happen with this problem, and so somebody does something about the problem. All right, that's one phase of it. Nobody has yet told this person to go sit down or sign his name or fill out this piece of paper or draw his books from the window on the left, don't you see? So both of those things have to be handled. You could say that every post, and God pity the field auditor, I happen to know that he wears 105 hats. The field auditor operating all by himself wears 105 hats. That's right. That's the number of hats he functions with. Now, if he doesn't 8C the situation, why, he's lost at once. Be causative. So the whole motto is just be causative toward the people who approach, and you will move them at once into the surface area. That's it. Don't go being an effect to the public. Every once in a while, you see some auditor half-starved to death. He gets a hold of a PC, and he needs that fee. So he starts doing anything he can to get that fee. Makes himself an effect. You know, he generally winds up not getting the fee. It's quite remarkable. Very remarkable. That's because he too much has to be the effect of the fee. He has to be then the effect of the PC. To such a degree does he have to be the effect of the PC that he has to put up with anything, and he then finally abandons 8C and really doesn't handle the problems of the PC, and all these things all go together in a package. You'd be amazed how many restaurants you could walk into, find people sitting by themselves, sit down across from them, start a session. You'd just be amazed how many people you could do that to. No preliminary, nothing. I never been successful in getting auditors, except when they were being trained in ACCs, when Nibs made them do it. Go out and grab people off the street. Just that. It's quite remarkable how often this works. If you yourself have a totally brave attitude toward it, you know, you walk up the person very casually and you say, well, you look like you're not having too good a time, look like you're in a little bit of trouble. And then you'll say, yes, I am. You say, how about some auditing? Well, here's my card. Now, come over. And he says, what's that? Well, I'll tell you when you get there. And here's my card. Now, you'll be there at 8 p.m. this evening, okay? And what are you, a practitioner of some sort? Or are you a doctor or something of the sort? Yeah, that's right. He'll say, gee, you know, what do you know? Didn't know it was that obvious. You'll be surprised how many people turn up if they are 8C. Now, all the social machinery people have actually breaks down before direct intention. But the thing that causes difficulty in this lineup, the thing that causes difficulty in moving people along this line of methodology, has a great deal to do with the invasion of privacy. I won't call it privacy because that dignifies it. You have to be willing to invade privacy, very definitely. Well, when you realize that the highest point of aberration on the third dynamic was the first time you decided not to invade somebody's privacy, and that nearly everything you've suffered from since was a determination not to invade somebody's privacy, you will see at once where this connects on 8C-ing somebody into a service zone. If you have a hard time invading people's privacy, you'll have a hard time 8C-ing them into a chair in an HAS co-audit unit. First PE and so forth. Because you think they have rights. I don't have any rights. What do you mean? What do they have? What has rights? That machinery? Those dramatizations? Those computing circuits? You mean those things have got rights? Ha! Pish patch. Next thing you know, I will have laws out saying they have perfect right to kill everybody. They rights. Where's this thing called rights begin and end? Well, it began when you first decided that somebody was entitled to privacy. Another Satan. And there he was over there. And you said he is entitled to the privacy of his own thoughts. It was perfectly all right to grant him some beingness. Perfectly all right. But to get on this kick that he was the only one who could invade that particular sphere and spatial area, and that you mustn't, of course, wound you up in the mechanics of mechanical communication
and started you straight into the overt act motivator mechanism. It's just as fast and as simple as that. He said, well, that's Joe, well, I must invade Joe's privacy and find out what he's got over there. I'll stay over here, and I will talk to him. And when I say something to him, then he says something to me. And then he says something to me, and then I say something to him. And then if he does something to me, then I do something to him. Because we're God. That's what happened. So I would thoroughly recommend anybody having anything to do with the P.E. Foundation H.A.S. co-audit lineup to have a clean conscience and to be cured of guilt. Because otherwise, the first to walk in, they will say, what is this? You know, I've heard something about this. And the person with a guilty conscience say, well, you're not doing very much, you know. You're not trying to do very much. You can come in if you want to, but you're going to be happy to. You want to know something about it? Well, all right. If you invade this guy's privacy that just walked in, believe me, he walks straight on in. You know, it's a symptom amongst PCs. It's a symptom that they're sort of over it. They've kind of made it when they no longer care whether the auditor talks about their case or not. This is pretty much a little index I use. I use this index quite frequently. When I find somebody getting desperate and caring desperately about whether or not his case is mentioned particularly, I know the boy hasn't made it yet. I don't know anything cruel about him. I just know he hasn't made it yet. That's all. Because he's still got a withhold reach mechanism, which is all frozen up into a thing called secrecy. And when he's got that undone, then he will find out that the sordid facts that he's always considered so sordid aren't very sordid now that he doesn't consider them sordid. It's quite remarkable. And the general add-up of the case gives that about at its make-break point. And the public at large walks in to something like this, and they have secrets, and they don't want things known. Therefore, they're very happy with muzzle co-auditing. Very happy. Nobody's prying. Perfectly all right to use the command, you know, think of something you have done to terminal. They come up after a while. I do say that I do get bored with some people who come out of a total secrecy and go in through the level of bragging. They can overdo that bragging. Definitely overdo bragging. Yes, well, I killed about 24 men, and there it was, some girl. Well, right after I was Messalina, then I really got wicked. The general approach in Scientology has no real substitute, organizationally otherwise, for all the people on the lineup to be causative. Well, we're making that pretty well. We're doing all right in that direction. We're making progress. We haven't arrived to any ultimate or anything, but we're making progress. And you might sometimes not believe that we make very much progress, but then you go associate with the people who pour out of the tube stations or 42nd and Broadway for a little while. You find out that you've been living around Scientologists, that something has changed. I remember my first experience in this direction, as I had been living out away from an organization for several days. I hadn't met a single Dionysus for days. And I'd been having to transact business with just usual run-of-the-mill people, you know. I was busy transacting business and getting things set up and so on in kind of an outpost area. And I hadn't realized what restraint and concentration I had had to achieve in order to get over that bit of period until I was driving back toward the foundation and realized that I was going to meet somebody in a very few minutes I could talk to. And that would be anybody there. Anybody there I could talk to. I was very, very happy to get home. Let me tell you. Up to that point, I hadn't realized that we had made an observable jump right there. There's nothing like that test to convince you that we have gotten somewhere. Now, of course, as years have gone on, that has gotten more and more overbalanced. One thing, we can move people in faster than we used to be able to, and so it doesn't take so long to establish. But the basic thing is that an individual today, as he walks in off the street, is not in communication. He is more or less being a total effect. He is trying not to be affected by anything. He is very, very hopeful that there will be no kind of an effect. He wants some sort of a thing that'll do something, but he doesn't want to do anything. This is the way he moves in. You're going to have trouble seeing this person? Well, you better go back to Upper Indock. There's no difficulty seeing the person. Circuits never talk back until you talk to them. Something to remember in handling people. Circuits never talk back until you talk to them. If you ever got a PC with a circuit turned on, and you want to do an old-time research experiment, ignore the PC and talk to the circuit. Just do that for a little while. The PC sort of sitting there as a spectator, more or less relaying what the circuit said, you know. And boy, that circuit validated gets stronger and stronger and bigger and more powerful and says more and more won't and can't and more disassociates. And finally, you haven't hardly got anybody there at all. But when somebody walks in and you validate their circuits and objections and go into it, you're talking to circuits. Well, please realize you're talking to circuits, not people. The more you talk to those circuits, the more trouble you're going to get into. There's probably only one real mistake the salesman of an excellent commodity ever makes, and that's to make a sales talk. Not very long ago, I had a salesman talk himself straight out of a sale. It was malicious of me and it was vicious of me. I didn't care whether I got what he had or not. It didn't make any difference to me. So I just wondered how long it was going to take for him to talk himself out of a sale. And I never said, yes, I will buy it, and I never said, no, I won't buy it. But he finally decided himself, all by himself, that he had better go, and he left. Now, there's an inversion of that. I spent an hour and a half one time and was actually able to sell a salesman on the idea of selling me his product. That took some real salesmanship. Not only selling it, but delivering it. I actually talked him into it. Because this boy, I wanted his product, and this boy was absolutely determined that nobody was going to buy his product. He didn't realize it, but he was absolutely determined. Every time you say, well, do you have a Model 1900? And he'd say, well, a Model 1900, that's very slow. It's too big a model. What do you want with a Model 1900? That doesn't really fit your needs. Well, do you have a Model 1900? Well, you know, very hard to deliver. We can deliver the smaller models with the 1900. That's the way this conversation was going. So I just turned around and gave him a sales talk on his own equipment and sort of brainwashed him little by little, you see. He eventually didn't know what he was selling and gave me the contract to sign, and we bought it. Now, there are various things that can happen in salesmanship. But most of them is talking to circuits. And if you HC the situation straight through, politely, courteously, HC the situation straight through, well, you never validate circuits. Now, the person has a problem. This person has a terrible problem. You'll find out that this problem is just poof. All I want practically is acknowledgement on the thing. I'm amazed at the number of fellows who have come up with problems and after telling me about the problems didn't have the same problem, but the problem of magnitude is this. I can't possibly come in on Friday night because I have to work Friday night. I didn't try to solve the problem for him. I just got him to state the problem in various ways. Where did he have to work? How did he have to work? Who was there? And so forth. Friday night, the guy in. He'd find a replacement for himself. Let him talk himself out of his problem. But that, too, is handling it. See? Even telling a person to solve the problem is handling the man's problem. That's, by the way, one of the best things to do. Have him tell you all about the problem, ask if he has any solution to it at all. Now, that's not good processing, but you're not trying to process him. You're just trying to handle a problem. Hey, he'll tell you all kinds of solutions. You get baffled sometimes when you sit there telling a man solution after solution after solution to his problems, being a psychoanalyst, and finding out that the fellow never puts any of these solutions into effect. Oh, no, the way to handle the solution of the problem is getting to tell you the problem and tell you the problem and tell you the problem, explain all the ramifications of the problem, and keep a good close interrogation on him on the subject of all the ramifications of the problem. We've got it all sorted out. You say, good. Now, you understand that problem? Oh, yes, better than I did before. You say, now, good. You solve it, huh? He will. All right. As soon as you move a person a short distance in Scientology, only very bad mistakes could boost him out of it. Now, that's a very funny thing. But you'd have to make a lot of bad mistakes. The main thing to do is not make those mistakes. Just do it directly, straightly, go ahead, render excellent service, move him on up the line. Now, it's just as important to have individual service that he can get someplace in the world at least, after he's through with HAS co-op, as it was to get him into a PE course in the first place. So you don't want him stopping halfway up the line. So therefore, that problem would have to be solved. But all of these problems are solved only with the cooperation of all Scientologists from going in a particular desirable direction and resolving the difficulties with good communication, resolving those difficulties on an optimum solution basis. Doing that sort of thing, we can make it. But exactly how do you get the chance to sit down and give enough auditing commands to a PC, or get somebody to give enough auditing commands to a PC to make clears? How do you do that? Well, you do that by HCing people through various precise steps with good administration on right straight up to the goal. And if you neglect this methodology of how you get them in and get them graduated up along the line, you will never get the chance to supervise him being given commands and never get the chance to give him commands yourself enough to make him clear. And the whole project of Operation Clear would break down at once. Not because of technology, not because of your desires, not because the PC's desires, but simply because the methodology did not exist to permit him arrive at the goal he desired to arrive at. I hope we won't make that mistake. Thank you.